presents First Years, a podcast for all but geared toward adult first-time readers of Harry Potter, who need a space to enjoy each book and have adult conversations about it. My name is Sarah, and I'm honored that you've allowed me on this journey with you. Crack open a butterbeer, grab a seat, and let's discuss. Today, we're talking about ministry control and unlikely empathy. Welcome, everybody, to episode 60 of First Years. Today, we're chatting about chapters 27 and 28 of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix. Thank you so much for being patient with me. We are officially on a regular schedule again. I needed that break over the summer because I was traveling. And then literally 2 weeks after LeakyCon, I moved across the country and started a new job. And that transition left me with literally zero time or a good place to record. So we're back now. I'm all settled into my new place, which is very recording friendly, and we will be back on track. I have missed you guys very much, and I have missed being on a regular schedule with this and diving into the Harry Potter series with you. First, I want to thank everybody who came out to LeakyCon. If you were at my panel, thank you so, so much. You made my entire weekend. If you don't mind spoilers and want to catch it, you can catch it on my personal Instagram, which is at VeritaSarahm, VeritaSarahm. It's on my feed there. I'll also be posting it as an episode on here as soon as I have the audio. I also have house points to give out. Thank you so much, Tweakers, for leaving such a kind review. I'm so glad you came to LeakyCon and like what you heard and are really enjoying the podcast. If you reach out to me and let me know what your house is, I will make sure that 20 points are awarded to you. So today we're going over chapters 27 and 28, and wow, do a lot of things happen in these chapters. So we left off where Dumbledore hires friends to teach divination, which we know went over real well with Umbridge. Dumbledore outmaneuvered her, and chapter 27 starts off with Parvati teasing Hermione about how she probably wishes she never gave up divination because friends is just so handsome. And Hermione is very quick to point out that she's not into four-legged creatures romantically. And we get an update that even though Trelawney has been allowed to stay at the castle, she's still not doing very well. They head to their first divination class with friends, and if you'll remember, we've only ever had pretty mysterious interactions with centaurs thus far in this series. They do divine with the sky and the stars, but it was a very Mars is bright tonight and not necessarily very clear. So it's interesting to see how these two different cultures of divination mix in their first class. The other thing we saw when we last saw the centaurs was that Friends was scolded for allowing Harry to ride on his back. And we see now that Friends has been banished from his own herd because in Friends' own words, quote, centaurs are not the servants or playthings of humans, unquote. And yet he agreed to work for Dumbledore, and that's a betrayal of what they stand for. So he can't return to the forest. In this first lesson, we find out right away that Friends thinks Professor Trelawney's form of divination is a bunch of BS. Mars doesn't really signify silly accidents or anything. There are much bigger movements that they track with the stars. He says, quote, "We watch the skies for the great tides of evil or change that are sometimes marked there. It may take 10 years to be sure of what we are seeing," unquote. And, quote, "In the past decade, the indications have been that wizard kind is living through nothing more than a brief calm between two wars. Mars, bringer of battle, shines brightly above us, suggesting that the fight must break out again soon. how soon centaurs may attempt to divine by the burning of certain herbs and leaves by the observation of fume and flame, unquote. And he goes on. But seriously, what an interesting insight, because that is totally true. A little over a decade ago, Harry's parents were murdered, and Voldemort was at large, and there was a war going on. Then Voldemort disappeared, and he's been working to come back, and now he is fully back and present. And we're just waiting to see what happens next. He's been after a weapon and planning something. And so really, the grace period between two wars could be over after the events of last book, don't you think? Voldemort is back and is again a major threat. And so the centaurs have been able to see this. And I wonder if that's why friends helped Harry in the forest back in first year. They've probably been able to see what this major change will be in the wizarding world. And I'm sure they know that Harry would have had a part in it. So maybe that's why friends would have allowed Harry to ride on his back. Something more than just being moral enough to save a child's life. But Friends does point out that sometimes centaurs get things wrong, and so you can't put too much stock into it. And while it may seem like they're definitely right about this, do you think there's any detail that he's revealed that might be wrong? Then at the end of class, we find out that Hagrid is doing something that isn't working. Enough that Friends needs to ask Harry for help in talking to him and warning him that he needs to abandon what he's doing. He won't tell Harry exactly what Hagrid is doing because he won't betray his confidence, but still asks Harry to convey the message. So what do you think Hagrid is up to? We know Hagrid gets up to many antics when it comes to magical creatures, but what do you think he's doing that's so interruptive that Friends needs to ask Harry to warn him because probably his own warnings haven't been enough? Yet Hagrid won't listen. I'm sure we're all really surprised about that. He really wouldn't listen when it came to Norbert in book one, nor their attempt to curtail his lessons in this book. So this is pretty on brand for him. But what I want to point out regarding Hagrid is that I do love that he says, quote, "There are some things that are more important than keeping a job," unquote. And I think even though we have moments where we might question Hagrid's sanity, especially regarding monsters, he does follow his heart, and I think that is a really important quality for him to have, especially when we think about the war that may be coming. Certain things that may have been super important a few years ago are going to become trivial things. And we kind of see this with the DA, right? Breaking rules may have been a super important thing in first year when you first arrive at Hogwarts, but now with everything on the line, you're willing to break rules in order to do well on your OWLs and feel like you're really working towards something and following your heart. So the DA is going strong and they learn to work on Patronuses. And Harry really feels like everyone is going to do outstanding on their OWLs, which are coming up pretty soon. Yet, everything falls apart. Umbridge finds out about the DA, and she's on her way. Harry tells everybody to run. Harry doesn't make it, though. Malfoy catches him and hands him over to Umbridge, who brings him into Dumbledore's office, and Kingsley and Fudge and Percy are there. Harry is about to admit to what he's done when Dumbledore coaches him through his conversation to get the culpability off of him and on to Dumbledore. And I love that Fudge and Dumbledore are taking shots at each other with the lines of, quote, "Nothing like a good witness, is there, Dumbledore?" unquote. Quote, "Nothing at all, Cornelius," unquote. And they bring Marietta Edgecombe into the room. She's the one that ratted them out. And we see that her face has sneak written on it, and she refuses to say another word. This was why Hermione had everyone sign the parchment when they formed Dumbledore's army. This was the insurance policy to make sure they knew exactly who they could and couldn't trust. And it's a good one. And it's impressive that the adults don't know how to counter it. Yet Umbridge has more than one witness. Willie Wittershins was able to hear their plans in the Hogshead and relay that information. And because of this, he wasn't prosecuted for the regurgitating toilets. So that's some more blatant corruption for us in the wizarding world. Even one of the old headmasters is upset about it. And check out this Easter egg. His name is Fortescue, so he has to be an old ancestor of Florian Fortescue, who runs the ice cream shop in Diagon Alley. How fun is that? So what do you think about this situation? What does this say about the wizarding world we've been presented with? Are you surprised by it at this point? Or not at all? And Dumbledore comes in clutch with the technicalities. We love to see it. He points out that at the time, forming a society was legal, and that unless they can prove that things continued after, that Harry shouldn't be in any trouble. And Marietta supports the idea that no meetings have been going on. And Umbridge gets so angry, she literally, the word used here is seized, Marietta, and we see Dumbledore jump into action right away. It is clear that Dumbledore, even if he hasn't been there for Harry, as I pointed out a lot in this book, cares fiercely for his students and will not let Umbridge manhandle them. He is protecting Marietta and does it without a second thought. That gives us more insight into Dumbledore and how he operates too. Yet did you catch this next sentence? Quote, she was still clutching her robe up to her oddly blank eyes, staring straight ahead of her. A sudden suspicion connected to Kingsley's whisper and the thing he had felt shoot past him sprang into Harry's mind. Unquote. Now this is interesting. The first time I read this, I thought, oh my god, is he using an unforgivable curse on Marietta, like the Imperius curse, for example? But Dumbledore says that he modified her memory. This is very interesting to see because A, it's very clever, and B, it's kind of a ballsy move to do when you're undercover and the minister is quite literally right there. It's also interesting to see what the stakes are in this situation where Dumbledore very much steps up to protect Marietta from Umbridge, but Kingsley is okay and gets a pass for using a charm, a memory charm, on a student. And I understand the stakes are great here, and they are trying to protect Harry and everybody else from what is happening, but it did strike me as very interesting that it's okay to perform something like this on a student after having this moment where Dumbledore is stepping up to protect a student from another teacher who was acting out of line. Do you think that is justified in a situation like this? Do you think Marietta would have confirmed the details? Or do you think she would have gone along with what they were saying anyway? Because she clearly is in distress with the side effects of this curse. So they reveal that they have the list of names, the sheet that everybody signed. And this is the one that Hermione assured she wouldn't leave lying around. But I can't help but think that maybe she should have thought a step ahead just in case. Like maybe charm it so that if your name isn't on the list, you can't read the list. Something Marauder's Map-esque, maybe. Dumbledore does some amazingly quick thinking here. He looks over the list of names and jumps on the fact that it says Dumbledore's Army, not Potter's Army. And he takes all the blame and leans into the conspiracy that he's been trying to raise an army to take over Fudge and the Ministry. And then he tells McGonagall that Fudge will regret this and leaves while he still can. So So for the second time in this series, we have Hogwarts without Dumbledore. What do we think is going to occur here? Because Hogwarts without Dumbledore is about as jarring as a Hogwarts without Hagrid. And we know from past books that Voldemort never tried to take over Hogwarts because of his fear of Dumbledore. And now he's fully back, and Dumbledore is no longer standing in his way. So that doesn't seem to bode very well for everyone else that's left at Hogwarts. Might I remind you that the last time Dumbledore was not at Hogwarts was during the Chamber of Secrets, when the basilisk was slithering around, petrifying people. Yet, it seems like Dumbledore has a plan, because he says that Fudge will regret this, and that he isn't going into hiding. So where do you think he went? What's his plan to get control back of Hogwarts? Because he has to know that he can't just stay away and let Fudge and Umbridge run wild and do whatever they want and just completely destroy the wizarding education system. He literally just proved how much he cares for his students, and I'm assuming he won't just let them have a negatively impacted education from these two. At least I would hope not. And that's a whole other point we should talk about, and one that connects to our world. Umbridge and Fudge are adjusting the education system and prohibiting students from learning certain spells under the guise of they're just not appropriate for this age group, when that's literally bullshit. And they're doing it because they don't want autonomous students who can train and think for themselves and have the necessary skills for real life after Hogwarts. It makes them easier to control. Especially in this scenario, it's very black and white. If they don't have the proper skills to defend or protect themselves, then the ministry can quash literally any kind of uprising because these students never learned these skills. Although really, what's going to happen, right, if we just think about this logistically, if you have students that can't defend themselves, and then you have a Dark Lord who is very powerful and is actively trying to take over everything, you're just creating a situation in which these students are much more at risk of being killed by Voldemort, or being put in a situation where maybe they do have to join Voldemort's side because there is no other option. They can't defend themselves, right? So we've seen this sense of modification in education in other states that have banned certain books or topics from the classroom. And they always put it under the guise of, it's not appropriate, we're actually protecting students by doing this. When really, they're just making sure that students can't learn what they need to, and are only exposed to topics that these local and state governments want them exposed to. It hinders their ability to connect with others, and think critically, and learn the truth about other people and their own history. It's very scary to think about. Same with this close connection of the government, literally interfering with what is supposed to be an independent branch of the wizarding world. There are no protections for students. And this isn't the government coming in and standardizing lessons and making sure they have a well-rounded education that they need. This is them overstepping and spying on students and their families because they're afraid that people will rise up against them. So that raises the stakes, doesn't it? Now that Dumbledore isn't here to try and keep things going for students as they have been, what do we think about that? Especially going into chapter 28, where we learn that Umbridge is now headmistress of Hogwarts, which I hate saying. Unfortunately, we saw that coming 20 miles away, right? Yet... the office won't let her in, which is absolutely amazing. When we say all of Hogwarts hates her, it's literally all of Hogwarts, not just the humans in the castle. So here are the immediate impacts of Umbridge becoming headmistress. The Inquisitorial Squad. Filch can physically punish students now, or at least when Educational Decree 29 comes out. Peeves will be expelled. Mail is being read, the Flu Network is being watched, and secret passageways are being monitored. So clearly things are just going to get worse. And Harry gets invited to her office to have a discussion. And she tries to question Harry, but he very quickly catches on that there's probably something in his drink. And his instincts kick in, and he stops himself just before he's about to take a sip. Something that we know Moody would be very proud of. She is trying to get information out of Harry about Dumbledore, Sirius, and anything else that she can get out of Harry. So thank God he realized he shouldn't be drinking this tea. We can assume that Veritaserum, I keep trying to say my username, Veritaserum is used here. So, you know, that's also great to know that that's allowed now, casually. Yet they're interrupted by an explosion, or several. Fred and George, now not caring about being expelled, set off their fireworks to cause absolute chaos in the school. And can we just talk a moment about how great Fred and George are and how talented? They really do some incredible magic with their inventions, and it's genius that stunning the fireworks just makes things worse. They really thought this through. And the whole school lays back and watches her suffer. Truly iconic. They even rub off on Hermione, who admires them and says she's feeling a little rebellious. She's finally done with Umbridge's shit and will support any rule breaking that makes her miserable. We love to see the growth from Hermione. Harry falls asleep that evening and again dreams of the Department of Mysteries. The door opens, and he ends up in a circular room lined with doors. Then he gets even further into a, quote, long rectangular room full of an odd mechanical clicking, unquote. Then another door. He ends up in a, quote, dimly lit room as high and wide as a church, full of nothing but rows and rows of towering shelves, each laden with small, dusty, spun glass spheres. Unquote. And here, he knows exactly where he's supposed to go. There's something he wants. And because of course, he gets woken up by a bang of a firework. This is really getting teased out for us over the course of this book. Yet there's another downside to this. Not just that Harry isn't getting the answers he wanted, or the answers we want as we impatiently read this, but he also has another occlumency lesson with Snape. And to top that off, things go super south for him and Cho. They argue over Marietta's actions. And I want to ask you, who do you think is in the right there? So Harry goes to occlumency, but he's saved from getting his mind unraveled by Snape because they finally found Montague, so Snape needs to go handle things. However, Snape makes a big mistake. He leaves his memories and the Pensieve out. And Harry just can't help himself. We finally get an inside look at Snape along with Harry as we dive into Snape's worst memory, the name of the chapter. And we learn a ton. Harry gets to see his dad up close as a teenager for the first time. Same with Sirius and Remus and Peter. We get to see what life was like in school for them, after only hearing stories through Sirius and Remus. And what else is cool here is that we get to see OWLs in action. Harry's going to have to take these exams by the end of the year too, and now we know what they look like. This is a significant chapter because it's a little bit of a reality check for Harry. Harry, who has built up the image of his parents in his head his whole life because he never knew them, finds out that they're flawed and human and maybe weren't the perfect people he always allowed himself to believe. And there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not saying that Harry should have been realistic when it came to his thoughts about his parents. He is someone who has spent many years in an abusive household and never got the chance to know his parents. And so it makes perfect sense that he would have built them up in his head, because they had to have been better than being with the Dursleys. Not to mention, he's heard great things from those who knew them. And yet, they're human. They were teenagers and didn't get along. James wasn't always the nicest guy. And we find out that maybe Snape's hate of James was justified, because he had to experience things like this from him. And Harry understands that more than anyone. And it's a very jarring moment for him to have, because he hates Snape. Rightly so, because Snape treats him terribly. And so for Harry to have a moment where he experiences true empathy for Snape is a wild moment for Harry and makes it all very confusing. Because now we have a character who is multidimensional, who isn't just a one-note bully like, say, Draco, but went through some terrible things at the hands of another. And so maybe the reason why Snape hates Harry so much is because of James's actions to him at school. Really, the only one who comes out of this scene with nothing at fault is Lily. She came to help Snape, and he calls her a mudblood, and so she turns on him, but not in the way where she joins James's side. She was provoked by a very intense insult. She still thinks James was in the wrong, too. And she gives James a lot of shit, too. And James takes his anger from that moment out on Snape again, even though Lily was trying to get him to stop before she walked away. Like I said, this is a very harsh reality check for Harry, who has his illusion broken about his dad, his mom, Snape, Sirius, and Remus. The end of this chapter is, quote, "What was making Harry feel so horrified and unhappy was not being shouted at or having jars thrown at him. It was that he knew how it felt to be humiliated in the middle of a circle of onlookers. Knew exactly how Snape had felt as his father had taunted him, and that judging from what he had just seen, his father had been every bit as arrogant as Snape had always told him." Unquote. That is huge. And from a literary standpoint, is a very important moment to have. Because we can't have one-note characters. Characters need to be multifaceted and complicated. And that's what we get here. No one is perfect, and no one is 100% evil. There are reasons why Snape acts the way he does. And also, James wasn't the perfect hero that Harry expected him to be. I think in life, we always find out how certain people aren't perfect, and maybe we built them up in our head. That goes along with the phrase, "don't meet your heroes," right? Because they may not meet your expectations. But we experience that throughout life on a smaller scale with people close to us. We all have a moment where we figure out our parents don't have all the answers, or they don't show up for us in the way we need them to. Perhaps we have friends that don't have our back like we thought we had theirs. Maybe you looked up to someone who you thought could do no wrong, and they really messed something up for you. It can be a hard reality check to have. One we don't often ask for, but is thrown our way anyway. And dealing with that is complicated and difficult. Especially because it's almost like a loss, right? A loss of what you thought was true. And maybe it'll make you feel a little foolish. Harry can't really catch a break in this book. He's already dealing with trauma and PTSD, and now he has this that he has to deal with. How do you think he'll deal with it in the upcoming chapters? How has this changed your perspective on these characters? Let us know at firstyearspodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram and Twitter at First Years Pod. You can find me on TikTok and Instagram at Verita Sarahm, VeritaSarahm. Fair warning, my personal Instagram and my TikTok are not spoiler free, but First Years will always be spoiler free. Reminder, if you want to earn house points, you can rate and review the podcast and leave your name in Hogwarts House, and you will earn house points as well as a shout out on here. I'm so excited to get back in the swing of things, so be sure to tune into Instagram at First Years Pod to see what we have coming up. Thank you guys so much for joining me again, and I hope you are as excited as I am to continue through Order of the Phoenix. I have a lot of great ideas coming up, and I can't wait to share them with you. For next episode, you need to read chapters 29 and 30, and I will see you guys then. First Years is a production of Matchbook. It's produced by Quinn Parker and myself, Sarah Jones-Dittmeyer. All sources can be found in our show notes or on our website at authorsarahjonesdittmeyer.info/firstyearspodcast. That's Sarah with an H, and Dittmeyer is spelled Dittmeier. Please remember that staying a Harry Potter fan is the biggest form of revolt that you can have, and we are committed to continuing to make this fandom and this community safe and welcoming to everybody.